if you have some goals you want to achieve, try to think about what is the next step that gets me there. So for example, if I want to work on the front lever, maybe it would be good if you're strong enough an attempt, or if not, just a pre-exercise for it, instead of only doing pull-ups, for example.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Gorillation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is the 2-time Austrian champion, an extremely strong athlete in statics, but also in weighted calisthenics. I'm happy to welcome you, founder of Danuk Calisthenics, Achim Görlös from Austria.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making this possible. And for the people who don't know you, let's directly kick off. Who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm Achim. I'm 24 years old, doing calisthenics since almost 8 years. So I started like when the sport became more popular in Austria. I was one of the first people who did it, like not who did it, but who went to like events and stuff like this. So some friends of mine tried to make the sport bigger in Austria. So I started, I think it's 4 years ago now, Danuk Calisthenics. So I'm doing tutorials and also just workout videos online, providing material online and giving workshops. And yeah, before Corona, we also had events. So I have also been in the Austrian street workout head team. So we organized some stuff, events, meetings, whatever. And yeah, that's what I do with calisthenics. I'm an athlete myself since like also 8 years, like I said before. I've been to the world championships similar times, like 2 times freestyle, 2 times power and strength. And yeah, so I'm trying to like manage being an athlete and organize at the same time, which is not always easy since I'm also studying to become a teacher. So I'm doing many different things in my life, but that's it's mostly about my calisthenic stuff I do.
Yeah, and when I have to describe you, you're like a really busy person. You're like, you're doing a lot of things at the same time. You're like really versatile is the word that pops into my mind, but like you're doing freestyle, you're extremely strong in statics, but you're also doing weighted calisthenics. You also competed there, which is really interesting because you combine so many things in one person. And it's like you're so well networked with a lot of athletes in the scene. You're like also helping with the FIBO every year since 2017. I'm looking forward to the interview and
thanks. That describes me a little bit. So I'm a person who likes to do everything at the same time, and sometimes it's too much. Yeah.
Yeah, because your day also has only 24 hours. So I can totally relate. Let's kick off with the hard facts. People are always asking that. How tall are you?
I am 173 centimeters tall.
Okay, 73. And how heavy are you?
I think I'm 70 kilograms, maybe 71 at the time.
Okay.
Yes.
Off competition face. You already said 24 years old, right?
Yes.
Perfect. Then, let's kick off with your story. How did you get in touch with the sport? For me, you're one of the faces, maybe even the face of the Austrian calisthenics scene. And let's kick off. What is your story? How did you get in touch with the sport?
I got in touch with the sport, I think it was 2014, when I went to the gym. So actually, I started working out at the gym when I was 15. Before that, I did some kind of calisthenics. I just wanted to get stronger. I was very skinny. And I did just some push-ups, crunches, and stuff at home. And then I got to the gym. I was allowed to go there when I was 15. Trained 1 year at the gym. And in the gym, when I became 16, 2 guys, they were training in the gym, but they did calisthenics there. And they asked me if I wanted to join them. And through that, I started to try out some stuff. Like, I think the first things I tried was muscle up. I already had some good pull-ups, so I did some ugly muscle up then. And handstand against the wall and stuff like this. That's how I started. Even broke down with my first handstand against the wall. I can still remember it. I fell on my And yeah, so I like started from not completely from zero because I was at the gym before, but before I got to the gym, I didn't have any experience with strength sports except for this little home workout stuff I did at home. And yeah, then 2000, I think it was 2016 maybe or 2015, I started to work out in the park more. So this was one of the first calisthenics park we had in Vienna. And from there, I kind of got a little bit into the community. It wasn't very big, the community back then, but there was a first competition. It was the Austrian National Championships. No, sorry, it was even 2014 when I got into the park the first time. But 2014, there was the first Austrian Championship. And I just went there. I was not a pro, but I had some skills. And I even got second. The level wasn't very high. Wow. And so this was my beginning of getting into the sport as an athlete back then.
So in 2014, there was already a calisthenics competition in Austria, like a national championship.
Yes, it was the first one. Yeah.
Wow.
It was even with Ed Checo from the Bar Stars.
What?
Yes, yeah.
In Austria, like... Everybody who doesn't know Austria, it's like it's a quite small country, like not completely small, but it always impresses me how like this the country is like so far developed for calisthenics in terms in relation to its size. I think
I think that we are good in organizing things, but we are not the best in being the strong-minded athletes, because we think very organized, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you train in Austria, you hear a lot of people, isn't that dangerous and isn't that dangerous? Mm-hmm. So we are like maybe a country who is more about where it's more about thinking than training. So a lot of people organize stuff, but it's not like we are the strongest, have the strongest athletes in the world.
Yeah, but still, so your goals in the before the gym, what did you do? Like, you didn't do any sport, not even like football or.
I was a cardio guy. It's a bad guy. Wow. I was doing running when I was 13, 14, also with 15 still. I was jogging and running. I also competed there. A little bit, but not on a professional level. So I was more like the guy, I trained maybe one or two times a month, and then I just got to do a cup and ran there. I was good at it. Maybe that's why I'm also still not bad at endurance, because it was just like I was born with it. And before that, I tried some other sports as a child, karate, tennis, whatever, but nothing, never professionally.
Okay. And when you started with, you said like handstands, muscle ups, like did you start with, I don't know, the goal of becoming good in statics or weighted, or was it just, what was the goal in the beginning?
I think the goal was to do, if I'm honest, just to do impressive stuff. I was not thinking about categories like statics or dynamics or whatever. Still not good at dynamics, folks. But I was like just trying to be better than I was before. And I think I like the thrill of doing something that seemed hard or impossible, like a muscle up, for example, because I wasn't able to do it. So it seemed very hard to me. And I like the idea of achieving it, I think. And since it was something I had a chance to be good in, I went into it. I think it was the combination of personal preference and also just having the thrill of doing something you haven't done before.
And did you ever have like physique goals in the beginning that you thought, yeah, I want to gain, 3-4 kg. I want to double the size of my arms. I don't know.
Yes, if I'm honest, I'm a little bit ashamed for it, but I started calisthenics only for physique goals.
Wow.
When I was 15, because the guys I mentioned before told me, oh, you will get bigger with calisthenics and whatever. And I already built like 10 kilos of muscles in the year of going to the fitness center. So I was disciplined there. And then I gained some more kilos, even with calisthenics. But then the goal I just didn't care about gaining more muscles or whatever anymore. So then I switched the goal to the skills, which was just a thing that was fun to me. So it was in the beginning, I actually started with thinking, oh, I can gain even more there. But then I haven't been interested in it. Like maybe a few months later, I I started to not care about it anymore.
Okay. And yeah, let's jump into this time. How did your development go? So today, when I see you performing, you have like a really, really, really solid straddle planche. You have like you're also like progressing well. That's at least my last update for the full planche. Like the statics are like really solid. How did they go in the beginning? People are always interested in how long did it take from the first street workout ever, like the first calisthenics training, to the first good straddle planche hold.
Yeah, I can tell you the example of the planche and also of the front lever maybe, because those two are often asked. It was like this. In the beginning, I did not even think about planche because I didn't know it existed. So I was like, was the hardest pushing exercise I could imagine was handstand push-ups against the wall. So this is something I did in half reps, maybe at the beginning. So I can tell you when I started calisthenics, my lever in clean pull-ups was maybe 15. I think I did 20, but not clean ones. So let's say 15 clean ones. And maybe the same amount of dips, but I even didn't do dips, a lot of dips back then. But this was my general lever. So I was better in pulling than in pushing. And I started to train for the front lever just with doing front lever raises. I just thought it was a core exercise. I didn't even think about holding the front lever. I just did front lever raises because it was a cool exercise I saw. And from the beginning on until I held my first, not perfect, but until I held my first front lever, it was maybe 1 year. Yeah, 1 year of time, like from 10 to 15 pull-ups to a front lever hold. But cleaning it up took maybe another year because I wasn't even focusing on stuff like shoulder depression or stuff like this. For the straddle planche, I can tell you that it took a bit longer for me. I started, I think, 1 year after I started with calisthenics, or maybe half a year. Then I started working on the planche, and it was mainly with tucked and also with attempts on the floor. But attempt was like starting in a straddle stand, putting the hands on the floor and just trying to put my feet up, and the same on the parallel bars. And from this point of time until I got my first straddle planche solid hold, I think it was 2 to 3 years. So it took me much longer for this planche. I don't know why. I think I'm not that talented in it, but it's not an excuse. I was just stronger in the pulling movements from the beginning on. And yeah, this was the amount of time it took me. I trained it like maybe 3 times a week, maybe 4 times a week, attempts. Like then I switched to attempts for this planche. I started to go into the handstand and trying to come down. And that's how I got my first solid holds then. Yes. Wow. Still not the best at planche right now.
Yeah, but like what I was always impressed in, because we did quite a few FIBOs together, 17, 18, 19, I think, 3 FIBOs we did together. And what always impressed me is that like you did these shows, and I think in the beginning, you did so many shows and then also workshops, and like, I don't know. Then you also every evening after the FIBO, you did your workout. And for me, it was like, what the fuck? Like, what is he doing? And you did 3-4 shows in a day, and the straddle planche was always that clean and that such a solid form, even though it was a show, you know, like, and the general public doesn't care if you hold it the straddle planche for 2 seconds or 5 seconds, but this was always impressive for me, that you always kept the form and that you always had these muscle endurance, like strength endurance, to be able to hold it again. So maybe you can tell us more about your training today, and like how is it possible for you to combine the endurance parts, the strength part with aesthetics?
Yeah. Thanks for that. Like you mentioned before, I think it's just something, if I'm honest, with since I came from running, and I always had an endurance mindset. Maybe when I started calisthenics, I even had some very intense workouts in the beginning. Maybe that was a reason why I always have been good at showing a lot of elements, like a long combos, for example, or a lot of shows. So I think this was also the reason I won the championships in Austria. Maybe not because I had the single best move, but because I was able to show a lot of moves in a short amount of time. So a higher variation of moves. And this endurance, I actually can tell you method to get it or whatever, but I think it was it's because of the reason I always trained statics but also basics, and I always also trained basics with the mindset of doing an endurance workout. So not every day, but I still do it sometimes like this. For example, I train planche and front lever, and when I have a short amount of time, I do it in an intense workout. It's not the best for gaining the perfect form or the longest holds, but for the endurance, sometimes it's good to have it. And right now, I actually don't know it. I would have to try right now, since there are no shows and no competitions. I also didn't do that many combos because I was working more on silly moves right now. But I think that my endurance at this point of time is a little bit worse. But if I would start to train longer combos again, it would come very quickly. So I would say endurance is the thing that comes fastest and also can go away fast, but you can gain it back fast. So I also trained for the power and strength championship, which was only about endurance in basics, like pull-ups, dips, whatever. And at this point of time, I also was able to do my strongest statics combos. So it was very interesting because I trained a lot of reps and endurance. And I think this also always helped me for my combos and statics. So I think it's because I always combined basics with statics.
Okay. So if we jump into a peak phase, like really a phase where you were at the top of your level, how did you train at these times? How did you manage to, because like you share some clips of really impressive weighted numbers on your Instagram, but also the statics strength. How does a week look like where you combine the weighted, or let's also call it endurance workout, if you do some basic sets with high numbers and the statics?
Yeah, how a week of training looks like, do you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm training very similar at the point of time. In some moves, I'm stronger than ever before right now, in some not. So it's hard to always keep the level at everything, you know. But my training generally looked and still looks like this. I train upper body strength or calisthenics specific training 4 to 5 times a week. So I have 4 times where I like do it with a routine, or like I have the routine on, it's the days I just train on, you know. And a 5th day is optional, however I feel. And the 6th day is only for the legs. So that's how I train right now. And it's also kind of the mode I trained before. I had the 2nd leg day back then, but I tried to now have a more intense leg day once a week, and the 2nd day of the week where I also do some legs, but not only. But whatever, how my training generally looks like is that I start off with statics or with hard skills, like maybe one arm pull-ups or deep handstand push-ups, whatever. It depends on the day. And I always try to go from the hardest movements to the easiest ones. So in the very beginning, I start off with maybe not even with strength statics, but with balance, like maybe handstand works or whatever. And then I come to training statics. On the most days, I train statics not with combos, but with holds, just single holds or front lever pull-up reps or whatever. And on some days, I train them in combos. So if I would be preparing for a competition, I would do the same, but just with combos. So I would have a lot more statics in one set if I did a combo with it. And I would repeat that until I would say that I was fatigued. So it's mostly 1 hour, 2 hour, whatever. I have longer rest times in this part of the training. And this is my statics training. Depending on the phase I'm in, so if I would prepare for a competition, I would not be going to tacked planche holds or just rank flag max reps or whatever. But if I'm in a phase where I just try to build up, I do it. And in the end, after I did the statics work or the strength skills work, I'm going to basics. Right now, it's a little bit less weighted, only once a week, but I also had it twice a week. And on the other days where I'm not doing weighted basics in the end, I'm doing normal basics, sometimes with endurance, like without break times, sometimes not. It's a little bit spontaneous, actually. So I'm not having it planned all the time, everything. But I have a concept in my mind that I'm following. And the concept is that I do 4 times a week. First skills. On some days I try to do more straight arm skills, like front lever planche. Some days more bent arm skills, like Hefesto, one-arm pull-up, handstand push-up. One leg day. And in the end of my upper body trainings, the basics or weighted basics. So that's it.
Cool. Do you feel benefits from the weighted workout for your statics?
It's a good question because I don't know the answer. I can't tell the difference because I always trained weighted. So I don't know how it would be if I haven't trained it. I feel like the general strength and also endurance if I do reps with weighted is good. So the strength I got from it is good. But it's not that easy to say because if you do a lot of weighted calisthenics, it will also influence the energy you have in your next workout on the statics. So for example, if I do max reps, weighted pull-ups on Monday, and I try to do front lever on Tuesday or on Wednesday, it can influence my power. So I would say it's a balance. That's why right now I'm experimenting with only training weighted once a week and not twice a week. And I'm still making progress, at least at the weighted pull-ups. That's where I got some new personal records right now. Because I have a lot of work for one-arm pull-up or front lever, it still helps me to gain strength there in the weighted. But I would maybe describe it like this. You can like combine statics with weighted and it can help. But if the weighted stuff is your first preference, it might come that it influences your static work negatively. So the other way around, it's okay. If you do your statics and then if you feel good, you do your weighted stuff, it's okay. But if you max out your weighted stuff and then try to go to statics, it's probably a little bit harder in this way. So I would say it helps, it can help, but it can also be too much and it can also influence your power you get in your statics because you only have a certain amount of energy every week.
True. Definitely makes sense. General advice, general opinion on basics. Would you recommend to do basics to everyone? May it be a statics athlete, may it be a freestyle like dynamics athlete?
Yes, generally I would say yes. I would also say the further you get in calisthenics, the less basics you have to do, but it can still be beneficial to do it. So if you're a beginner or if you just started with calisthenics or if you maybe 1 or 2 years into it, I would recommend to put a lot of effort into basics. Like for a beginner, I would say probably 70 or 80% of their training time should go into basics. They can maybe try some skills, but the basics will be the most important part. So if someone is an intermediate, he can maybe work around 50% of the training time with basics. And if you're advanced, you can even go back to 30 or 20%. But it's always important to have exercises in your training, in my opinion, at least in some phases, not in every week, but in general, to have exercises in your training where you are able to do just more than 1 second hold or more than just one rep. But for example, if you're very advanced and you can do 10 front lever pull-ups, it's also a basic for you. So you will not have to choose another exercise, another pulling exercise where you get your reps in because you'll get your reps in or your second hold times in with the skills. So it depends on the lever. But I think there is also not a very strict border between skills and basics because a pull-up can also be a skill for someone who is learning first pull-up, just like a front lever is a skill for someone who learns the first front lever. So I would say like it's important to have exercises in your training where you have longer hold times to get some volume in, not always, but in at least in months where you try to go for volume work. Or if you don't have a periodization, just to generally have it in. But it doesn't always have to be basics. If you're strong enough, you can choose advanced exercises as basic work as well.
Interesting. You also already talked about periodization and also about volume, like all these things that I hear mostly in the coaching side of calisthenics. Do you have like a let's call it scientific approach or like a really structured approach to your training?
A little bit. A scientific approach can actually ruin your fun and even your quality of the workouts. If you're trying to figure everything out, what's the perfect way, whatever. There are so many factors we don't know about calisthenics. The first, it's a new sport. The second is everyone is different, very different in this sport, like the physical measurements of everybody and whatever. It's a lot of factors that you cannot scientifically approach or know, like really know for sure. So I try to have some things in my mind. For example, the periodization is a principle that is used in strength sports like powerlifting. But it's also something that comes to me automatically. So I try to combine whatever I feel like doing with the things I know in theory. And even before I got to know about periodization, or I heard something from it, I did it initially because I felt like maybe I trained 2 months of only very hard holds and exercises where I was bad at or just attempts, whatever. It was a little bit too much for my tendons, maybe also for my nervous system. And my body automatically gave me the feeling of switching to exercises that are a little bit easier for me. But that's actually periodization, where you say I have maybe 1 month of training very hard exercises or 2 months, whatever. Then 1 or 2 months with training intermediate exercises or like the same exercises, but with longer hold times and harder easier progressions. And maybe then 1 month with even more volume. That's periodization, to try to just switch the intensity in different months or different phases of your training. So you can approach it scientifically or you can approach it however you like to feel it, but I would just recommend to listen to your body. For example, in some points of training, I feel like the tendons of my wrist, I don't have a very thick wrist. So sometimes I feel like the tendons of my wrist, it's a little bit too much for them. On those weeks or months, I will not pull a lot of Hephaestus. I will do more Hephaestus rows or whatever for still being strong there. And then at some point of time, I just feel like doing Hephaestus and then I go for it. And it's interesting. It's mostly automatically, like I would say, an automatic periodization. Yeah.
True. Like if you listen to your body, it automatically gives you a direction and basically advice. But you also work together with Dennis, correctly in mind as a coach, or like can you explain more how an advanced athlete like you, why does it still make sense to have a coach and to have somebody who guides you?
He's not coaching me at the moment, at least not officially. Like he officially coached me on a regular basis for half a year. It's some time ago. I decided to right now be not my own coach, but I'm not being into a strict coaching program with him, but I'm still in contact with him since he's also a personal friend of mine. So what he's very good at, or what I can say from the outside he's very good at, is teaching athletes with a scientific approach, or also with an approach that is more about planning very strictly the workouts. And he's bringing a lot of athletes that are working with him on a very good level with that. My personal opinion about it is that there are some people who like to work this way and who also progress this way. But for example, if you're a fun guy who just wants to go to the park and do whatever he feels like doing, I'm not saying that you should do stuff with bad form or whatever, but a guy who just is more about, like, let's say having a more emotional approach, this might not be the best way for you, because it might get on your nerves that you will have to write down every set and every sec hold and whatever. I also don't like it, do it all the time. So I can say there are very, very good athletes with a very emotional approach on training. They just do whatever they feel like doing and they get very good at it because their body tells them what to do and they listen to it. And then there are also some athletes who have more scientific approach. I personally like to combine both, but if I would be allowed to only choose one, I would choose the emotional. Even though I'm a trainer and even though I like to think a lot about what's the best way to work out and to make my thoughts about it, it can somehow also put the fun away of it, because you try to make everything perfect. But for example, sometimes maybe you need to do everything perfect. You just need to put your headphones in and do what you like doing, and you will be even stronger than if you think about everything perfectly, because you automatically do what you should be doing. But yeah, this is my thoughts on this topic. It's like, I think there are different opinions in it, and it's not wrong or right. I think it's just a personal thing.
Definitely. So the people that are coming for coaching to you, what kind of people are those?
I would say most of them like a mixture. I'm writing programs for them, so I like this approach of having a schedule and whatever, especially if you are not an athlete who can afford to only work out and do nothing else. You will probably need some kind of rhythm, so you even work out and you just have a plan about what you would be doing. But I like to combine a scientific approach, or a strict approach or a planned approach on training. I like to combine it with this emotional approach, where some people just feel like they want to do. So they feel like doing whatever they want to do. And people who come to me, I like to write programs for them, but in those programs, I also have some open space. So I maybe tell them, on this day, you can do this if you feel like doing it, but if you not feel like doing it, don't do it. So I like to combine both of it. And the people who come to me are, of course, people who like, let's say, a professional approach, because otherwise they would not have a coach. But there are not like people who want to, or most of them are not people who want to compete in the near future or whatever. Most of them just like to do it for fun. So I try to combine both approaches.
Okay, so again, you combine everything
yes.
It's part of your personality, I think.
Yes. Some people hate me, not hate me for it, but I know that there might be some coaches out there who talk maybe behind my back or whatever. I don't know it because it's behind my back. But I think some people might think this guy is crazy. Why does he do this? But I think that if you're only into the scientific approach, you will also lose some of the realities in the practice. That's why I try to always think about it. So when I write a program, I use the scientific approach, but I still leave some space open for emotional things. Like if you feel like doing handstand on that day, just do it. So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely know that from conversations with competitive athletes who have like a really crazy schedule and who are like being in the gym at midnight and doing their workout because they have to do it, and they are not allowed to go home before they end the workout, the whole workout that's in their head, and that's how they where they need a lot of willpower to do this. And I think only a few people are able to do this over years and years and years. And like, for example, you're in calisthenics since 2014. So like around about 8 years now, or 7 years, which is, I think there are really few people who are able to do this and who have the mindset and the willpower to push through this. And I can definitely, I always also see this as kind of periodization, where you have like 1 year of really extreme preparation for a competition. You do like everything that it takes, but then the next 2 years or next 1 year, you just, you follow your heart a little bit more. You listen to your body more.
Yes, so that's why what I'm trying to do, and that's what I'm also trying to do with my clients. Yes, that's a good summary.
Leg workout. I'm always impressed when I see your Instagram clips where you do some heavy squats. When I see your shows, your static shows, I wouldn't expect that at all. So. How does it influence your static skills? Do you feel it when you do your planches, your front lever? Is it maybe even productive? Does it support the front lever with the lower back or whatever. What's the thought behind it?
The thought behind it is I do it because I like to do it, but it's not good for my aesthetics. So I can feel one. It's interesting. I don't know why. It's probably because of the lever and because of the angle, but the front lever pull-ups are the exercise where I feel the most, my leg workout the most. So when I got heavier because of training more legs, the front lever pull-up was the number one exercise that got harder for me. So right now I'm at 70 kilograms. When I was like 63 kilograms, I think I had my best front lever pull-ups, better than right now, sadly, but that's it. And since I gained some of the kilos, I gained also on my legs and on my butts. It got harder and it makes it harder. It's really like this. You have to say it. It's like this. It's a reality. It makes your aesthetics harder to train legs. Try to put maybe 1.5 kilogram plate or a 2.5 kilogram plate on your knees while you do a front lever. You will feel that it's really harder and it's not much. If you train squats for a longer amount of time, it might be that you will even gain 5 kilograms on your legs. And if you try to do a front lever with 5 kilograms on your knees or maybe even just on your thighs, you will feel that it makes a big difference. So you cannot lie about it. It makes statics harder. And I know that I am also making it harder for myself because I'm training legs. I still like to do it, but I also give my skills a bigger, let's say a bigger worth, because if I can hold a front lever with doing 100 kilogram squats for reps, it's harder than being able to do a front lever without training legs at all. And that's why I know that, like, maybe from the outside it looks like I have worse statics or whatever, or it makes my statics harder, but for myself it still has a worth, because I know that it's harder because I do it. So whatever you want to call it, there are a lot of athletes, by the way, who also have strong statics and also strong legs. For example, like Denton or from England, or for example, Micha from Germany. So it's possible, but yeah, it makes it harder. The lower back is just a very small factor that gets stronger, but it's not like it will help you very, very much.
Okay.
And yeah, that's mainly, I would say, this is one thing actually, maybe we can talk a little bit about it, that a lot of athletes and people who train don't understand is the biomechanics of calisthenics. So I see even a lot of very strong guys who don't think about it, but it's very logical. It's just like let's go for the front lever. If you do a front lever, the center of your weight might be around your belly. So if you draw a line from your hands downwards, it might face your belly or your hip. So that's the center of your gravity there. And everything that's below this center of gravity will make the lever harder. So your shoulders and your back will have to be stronger to hold the weight. And if you have your legs, you will actually just have to have more strength in your shoulders to be able to hold the lever. If you have like heavier legs, you will have to lean forward more in the full planche, for example. And this, it's harder to hold it then. So it's just the biomechanical factor of it.
Does weight on the calves make the front lever a lot harder than weight on the butt, for example, because it's closer to this line?
Yes, if you think about it like this, it will be like it, because like you said, it's closer to the line. It will be like this, but I would say it's around the same, because if you start maybe squatting, the weight you will gain on your butt will be much more than the weight on your calves. Your calf is a smaller muscle, so the percentual gaining will be this maybe the same, but if you gain 50% more on your butt, it will be much more weight than if you gain 50% on your calves. That's why it maybe sums up for it. I actually don't have the exact measurements. We had it in university. It was interesting. A guy measured the percentual weight of every muscle in comparison to the whole body weight. But the calf is not a muscle that has a very high weight in comparison to your body weight. But yes, it's much harder to put 1 kilogram on your calf than you put 1 kilogram on your butt or on your hip while doing a front lever. You can try it out.
Wow. Okay. So, Definitely. And what is the way, or is there a way, if we like approach this topic from a health perspective, and it's healthy to work on your legs, what way is there to have like, let's say skinny but strong legs?
Yes, you can try to do that. It's even something I kind of try to. It's not possible to have very, very, very skinny but still strong legs. Strength is also like you need some muscle mass for strength, but you can try to generally work on more, let's say, coordinative exercises for the legs. So for example, if you do maybe jumps or maybe more balancing work on your legs, you can still have an intense leg workout, but which is more about coordination than about gaining muscle mass. But you cannot go around gaining mass on your legs if you work on them. So for example, if you look at the physique of a sprinter or the physique of a marathon runner, the marathon runner will have much smaller legs, but also not like they will be strong at being good at endurance, but they will not be strong at doing a heavy squat. So what you could do is having an endurance approach for your legs. So you will train the muscle fibers that are strong at endurance more. Those muscle fibers are not as heavy and as big as the muscle fibers who are working on maximum strength. So in this way, you could train legs without gaining a lot of mass there. But if you want to be strong, if you want to do maybe a 100 kilogram squat or a 150 kilogram squat or whatever, you will have to gain at least some mass in your legs, and you will not, like, the only thing you could say is I'm not eating anything so I can't gain mass, but this will also influence your upper body mass and it will also probably be not good. So what you could try to do, like I also heard it, it's not working, but it's a joke. You can try to squat and not eat on the day you squat, and if you work on your upper body, you eat a lot, but your body is not working like that. So you cannot your upper body and your legs are one part of your body, and you cannot try to gain mass in your upper body and doing strength work for the legs and trying to not gain mass there. It's just hard. But you can train like maybe more endurance or more coordination, then you will be able to have leg workouts without adding a lot of mass there, probably.
Is there a reps number that somebody can aim for to train the endurance part? Is it everything above 15 or 20, or what's the number?
Yeah, it depends. Like, I would say it's like scientifically, you could say, like you said, maybe 15 to 20 or 12 to 20. There is not the strict border, of course. You always train some part of the other fibers as well. But of course, the higher the reps, the less the more it will be due for endurance and the less it will be for the maximum strength. But yes, for example, for the squats, you could say if you do much more reps with less weight, you will not gain that much mass, but still it's a strength exercise. So maybe if you go for a long run, that's really something that might not influence your mass very, very much. But you can still gain some calves from that. So it's not like it doesn't do anything. So I can understand if people say I skip working on my legs completely, or I just do mobility work on my legs. It's like if you try to stay healthy, I would at least recommend to do some mobility work on your legs. If you're not working physically and sitting all the day, like most people are today, if they are not training, then I would recommend to still do some work for your lower body, just for having hip mobility and whatever. But you can skip the strength part, of course. For your health approach, it's good to have some basic strength, but you don't need to be able to squat 100 kilograms or 150 kilograms if you want to stay healthy. It's also okay to just have a little bit less intensity there.
Cool. Thanks for the insights. That's really interesting, in my opinion. Like it's not like a conversation with with a statics athlete, let's say, who never squatted and who is like completely against squatting, but it's really like that I interview somebody who is kind of neutral, like kind of a neutral perspective, I would say. And that's rare in the calisthenics. You have the street lifters who are like, what, you don't train legs, you're not an athlete, you have to be a complete athlete. And then there are the aesthetics athletes who don't work on the legs at all.
Yeah, I think it's stupid to have an approach where you say this is what it needs to be, this is what it needs to take. So if I'm honest, some people might not like me for saying that, but it's sometimes also an ego problem I see. I won't call any names, and I also don't have names in my mind, but I think it's a generally something that can happen if you define yourself by your skills in this sport, then you will start being like, oh, if you don't do it exactly like I do, then you're not as good as I am. And if you don't work everything like this, for example, if you don't work statics and basics and legs, you're not a real athlete. But I think it's stupid to have a concept in mind what you have to be a real athlete, but because it's just a concept, it's not reality. So I would recommend to everyone to just work on the things that they like doing. And if it's squatting, then do it. And if it's not, then don't do it. Because this comparison to each other takes the fun away, takes the motivation away. I think there is no point at all in doing that. I would just recommend everyone to do what they feel like doing, of course, to stay healthy. But if you're already into calisthenics, there is a much, much higher chance that you are healthy because you're actually doing something with your body, because most people don't even do anything for their body. So if you do agi push-ups and that's it, it's still better than doing nothing. And that's why I think that it doesn't make sense to compare yourself to others all the time or to other training like principles or whatever. Of course, you can try to get the best out of everything for yourself, but I would not recommend you to compare yourself with everyone.
Sure. And there are so many different goals, so many different motives and motivations behind the people that you see on social media, why they train and what are their goals. And you should never judge somebody just because he's skipping legs, but maybe it's his goal to set up some static records. And like, why should somebody who wants to do a statics world record, why should he be able to squat 150 kg at the same time? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, records or like really focus always needs to say no to other things.
Yeah, that's why I'm actually happy to not be only into calisthenics and into coaching. It's part of my life, of course, but I'm also like a normal guy. I'm even working for a local church and doing some other stuff. And sometimes when I think about those calisthenics problem, and then I look into the real world, let's say outside the calisthenics scene, it looks stupid. What are those guys arguing about? They could be thankful for having a nice sport, but instead of being thankful for just being able to do something, they argue about what's best. And it's an unnecessary problem that we make for ourselves, I think.
And I think it hinders and it like really slows down the growth of the sport. If the sport itself doesn't stick together, then it's harder to grow because nobody wants to be part of a hating community or something.
But it's a general human problem. It's not a calisthenics problem. True. Actually, I think the calisthenics scene is one of the friendliest sports
I experienced.
So nothing against the calisthenics scene. I really like it.
True. That's definitely true. I'm just like always scared that the many directions that are in the sport with freestyle / dynamics, with statics, with street lifting, with endurance, that it's too much to stick together, you know, like, but
yes, I understand. But you're trying yourself to be I think like Onation is a brand that tries to support everything.
Yeah.
I also think that it's good to not be only about one thing.
True. That's it. So we're a little bit the Achim Goerlis of the calisthenics scene. We do everything. We also received a lot of questions about your front lever. Like, what are the mistakes that you see people doing in their front lever training? What is your general advice for front lever training? Maybe the most useful, like people are always interested in something practical. So the most useful progression for you, or I don't know, just your experience and the mistakes that you see for front lever training.
Yes, very interesting question, because actually I have a front lever tutorial. It also got watched a lot of times, But some things in there I would maybe say differently right now, and I can do it right now, because I think that there is like one of the biggest problems, not only in front lever, but in skill training in general, is not to train specific enough. So if you are just working on tact front lever, it's good for your shoulders, maybe, but you will not get used to being in the same angle than if you are in the full front lever. So your let's say your hip and your hip flexors and your abs will not be contracted, or not at least not very much during the tact one, and in the full one it will be completely. So if you, for example, only work on tact and never go to a progression where your hip is opened, you will not get this part of the movement. Another, so this is one mistake I see people not including exercises where their hip is open. So for example, front lever raises or front lever negatives, full front lever negatives on the rings, or even half lay variations are movements where your hip is open. So I would recommend to try to, at least at a certain level, put some of those variations into your training. Another problem might be only working on the core and never working on the shoulders, because this is also like, it's a core part and it's a shoulders and back part in the front lever. And I think you will have to combine both of them. And one of the main mistakes is, of course, to only work on progressions with bad form. It won't strengthen the muscle groups you actually need. So just going for the hardest progression without being able to do it with any good form, it's also not the best thing to do it. But I think there is not like just one mistake people do. It's just a combination of everything. But try to keep in mind to be specific. And maybe one last example I can give you. Imagine a guy doing a tact front lever and then straightening his legs and body, going into a full front lever. Imagine a guy being able to do it. And you will look at him from the side. While he straightens his legs, the angle of his arms in comparison to his upper body will be a little bit smaller. So his shoulders will go backwards while his legs go forwards, because of the principle we talked about before of the center of gravity. So he will be in a different shoulder position. So you cannot also not only just go into training tact front lever for 1 minute and expecting to be automatically able to do a very good front lever, because it's a different angle. So that's just an example I can give. It's why it's important to train specifically and to try to also progress. Yeah. So right now, if I could only choose one exercise, it would maybe even be negatives on the rings for getting there step by step. But of course, it's good to have a variation.
Cool. That's good. You already said how long it took you for the first front lever. I think it was 1 year after the first workout. Yes. Yeah, I think we're mostly done with the workout part. How does your day look like right now? As you said, you're like doing a lot of things right now. So maybe you want to share a little bit your day right now. How does it look like?
Yeah, a typical day of Achim in Corona looks like that I'm getting enough sleep, which is nice, because my university is online and right now also not in the mornings, but more in the afternoon. So I get enough sleep right now, which is good. Sometimes maybe a little bit too much, if I'm honest. And yeah, I get up in the morning. However, I just try to sleep 7 to 8 hours if possible. Mostly it's actually 8, sometimes even 9 if I'm exhausted from working out or doing a lot of things. And since it's a lockdown, I'm going to university, as I said before. I'm studying to become a teacher at religion, sports, and biology. Those are the subject I'm studying. And I don't have a very typical day because it's a mixture of a lot of different things, mostly. But mostly I try to do some stuff outside in the morning. So since it's a lockdown and I'm staying at home a lot of time and I really love nature, I often go outside in the morning, not every day, but often. Actually, I'm doing like let's say, an inspirational prayer part in the morning. I like to do it for myself. I'm reading the Bible or whatever. That's what I do in the morning. Mostly it's reading the Bible, praying or whatever, meditating sometimes, just being a little bit quiet, not starting into the day with a very big rush. And I like to do it outside. And often I even combine it with organizatorically stuff that I can do from my phone, sometimes even with the laptop outside, not always, but sometimes. So sometimes you could catch me sitting on the forest, organizing my emails just because I like to be outside. Not every day, but sometimes. And then I might get home, have some university work to do there. For example, having the lecture or having to write an essay or whatever. It's very different. Then I might have 1 or 2 hours in between. It's not planned, where I have to do some organizing stuff. So since I'm not only working as a coach, as I said before, I'm also working it's not very officially, but sometimes it's officially, sometimes not, planning events for the church. I'm leading a youth group there. So sometimes I'm doing some organizing stuff in between. I'm having a personal training in between. And yeah, it's a mix of a lot of things. I don't have a very typical day, but I mostly work out on the evenings or afternoons of these days. And yes, in the evening, I like to meet some friends if I haven't met them while working out anyways, and to be with my wife at home. So yeah, I don't have a very typical day, if I'm honest. So but mostly my day is a mixture of at least 2 or 3 different things. So I'm not having, sometimes I try to block it. I try to just do 1 university day and then 1 day just for calisthenic stuff or whatever. But it's not always like this. Right now, at this point of time in my life, I'm also making a lot of thoughts about the future. So me and my wife also think a lot about stuff like global poverty and also global aid and whatever. So we have some connections to African countries, our friends in Africa who are working there. And yeah, maybe this will also be part of my future life, doing something for this. I am not seeing myself only as calisthenics person. I like the sport because it's something that gets people together. But in general, I'm not only focusing on this part of my life. So you might, I don't know it, I don't want to promise anything, but you might see me living in Africa one day working for something else and still working out on some bar there, probably, whatever. But I'm not knowing it right now. It's just something we are making thoughts about. It's just because we feel like we are very blessed with our lives in Austria. We have a lot of, like, we are rich people. Everyone who lives in Austria or Germany is rich in comparison to the world. And that's why we think about maybe doing something for where people don't have it and helping developing like stuff there. But it's nothing that's fixed yet. It's just something I'm making thoughts about. And so that's also, I also have some projects. For example, a project in Uganda I'm working on with a friend, and also some parts of my time are spent for stuff like this. So as I said before, a lot of different stuff.
Well, but thanks for sharing. Sounds really, really interesting, and definitely respect for that. And definitely really interesting, and good luck for that. So something that I would be interested in, how does your food look like in a day? Do you take care like for healthy food? Do you meal prep? What do you eat?
Yes. I talked about the topic right now. It's one thing I made some more thoughts about in the last time is like pure biological food and also buying more local food. So I had a food approach of just buying whatever has the most protein or whatever is the best for gaining mass. This was my food approach some years ago. But then I made some more thoughts about the production of the meat, for example, I was eating, and the production of the milk products and of the plants, everything I was eating. Where does it come from? Is it a good, is it a good relationship to the one who is producing it and whatever? Are the workers in good circumstances? So right now I'm combining, like trying to combine, thinking about having quality food, best from local, like from the locals. How do you call it? The local producers, yeah.
And farmers, not, whatever.
Not buying meat from Argentina or whatever, and trying to have a like biologically food if I can get it. So yeah, my nutrition is mostly vegetarian. I'm not a strict vegetarian, to be honest. So if I'm invited, for example, I will not say no to meat, but I don't cook meat or buy meat on my own. Same goes with milk, but with that, I'm not that strict. So I'm normally drinking biological milk. I'm just not trying to drink some trash kind of milk. And yogurt as well. It's produced from milk, so it's the same. So I'm not a vegan, but I'm making a lot of thoughts about, or try to make more thoughts about, where my food comes from. I'm not a professional and I'm not perfect when I'm honest with it. So I still have some things I buy where I'm thinking, where does it come from? Whatever. But with that, I try to eat still enough, eating it healthy. My typical day, I can tell it to you, is maybe some oats with some, maybe you know it, we have, I'm happy about that, we have it in biologically, it's skyr, the yogurts, maybe you know it. It has a lot of protein. So in Austrian, we say Topfen, or in German, Quark. It's something like this. And I eat it together with some oats and some fruits. Maybe I will have some eggs with some bread as a snack in between. And maybe I will have a second main meal of the day. Maybe it would be some noodles with vegetables or whatever. And I will have some snacks, like maybe nuts in between, and eating, of course, fruits or vegetables also in between. So I don't have a strict eating rhythm or schedule, but I'm trying to eat healthy. And I'm also trying to think about where the food I'm buying is coming from, which I didn't do before, but it's a challenge for me, to be honest. So sometimes you buy something in the store and then you think about, where does this meat come from? Maybe this cow was one of a million cows who was slaughtered in bad conditions, and I don't want to buy it if I think about it, but it's something you will have to start doing. So I'm trying to think about more, to think more about it at the moment, but no, I'm not a pro at it. So yeah, that's what I eat. Trying to have healthy stuff and if possible also local stuff.
Cool. Great. Yeah, the interview is already over an hour, so we come to an end slowly. Maybe to sum up all the training advice, workout insights that you shared with us, maybe you want to sum up what are the main three things that if people improved these things in their workouts, they would get much better results, much healthier results, whatever.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would recommend to the people I know, I don't know if it's an international problem or just an Austrian and German problem, is to actually try to work out and to have a rhythm, like trying to get some kind of plan you want to follow. It doesn't have to be perfect, but just some structure. Because as I said before, if you're not a professional athlete, you might even struggle to work out at all. So it's good to start with having like at least some kind of rhythm with it. So it doesn't have to be strict all the time, and you don't have to worry if you skip training for once, but try to at least have some kind of rhythm you want to follow. It will help you to stay into it. This is the first thing. The second thing I would say, if you want to achieve some exercises, actually go for it. I see a lot of people who are just doing basics, which is good and very healthy. But if you want to achieve a skill, you will also have to start working on it specifically. So try to think about what can get me where I want to get. So not only what can I do right now. Some people just work out for the sake of it, and that's good. But if you have some goals to progress, some people don't have these goals. They just want to work out to stay healthy, which is good. But if you have some goals you want to achieve, try to think about what is the next step that gets me there. So for example, if I want to work on the front lever, maybe it would be good to do two, if you're strong enough, an attempt, or if not, just a pre-exercise for it, instead of only doing pull-ups, for example. Yes, and the third thing would be try to have fun. when working out, because I feel like we have so many informations about calisthenics out there. It gets even more, and it's good. You have some people say you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do this. But if it's not fun to you, and if it's not something that gives positive energy into your life, it will probably not be something that you will keep doing. And even if it will not be something that gives you a lot of positive energy, so I would recommend you to try to have fun when you work out. So work out with partners. If it's better for you, try to go outside. Something for me, it's very important in those times of the lockdown to work out outside and not only staying at home all the time. So try to meet people, maybe try to do something that's good for you with the sport.
Wow. Well, that's cool. Thanks a lot for all these insights. We always have some quick questions, quick answers at the end of each interview. So yeah, pizza or burger?
Burger.
Sorry?
Vegan if possible. Like there are like vegan burgers, but it's okay.
True. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog person.
Do you have a favorite location for holidays?
Just nature spots, but not one specific.
Yeah, what are the athletes that inspire you?
Athletes that inspire me? I would say a lot of different ones, so I don't have one. But I try to take the best out of each one I have. One I can tell is, for example, Viktor Kamenov, a friend of mine.
Cool. Do you have a favorite book?
Yes, the Bible.
I expected that. Do you have a favorite movie?
Maybe The Chronicles of Narnia. I don't know if you know the movie.
Yeah.
But I liked it as a child very much, and I still like it very much. Even the story that's behind it, I like it a lot.
Cool. Yeah, do you have a favorite skill? Like, what is your favorite skill?
I would say maybe one finger front lever. I like it.
Yeah, the best calisthenics event you've ever been at?
Oh, wow, that's hard. That's hard. There are so many good ones, but I think the first FIBO was a very nice experience. So 2017, the first FIBO I have been to. But I don't know if it's... There are a lot of good ones.
So shout out to Bars Flex and to World of Bar Heroes for the great FIBOs, where we also get to know each other, by the way. Yeah, and then the last question, not a quick answer, but what's your message to the calisthenics community? What do you want to say, tell the listeners?
I would say, as I said before as well, try to make the best out of the sport. Try to not compare yourself to each other, but try to help each other and try to take the positive parts out of this sport for your life.
True. True words. How can people get in touch with you? Where do they find you? What links can they expect in the bio, in the description of this video?
Yeah. First, of course, my YouTube, it's a German channel, but there are subtitles for some videos there or for some tutorials. It's Daniel Calisthenics. My homepage, it's for if you want to have a coaching with me or whatever, there's my homepage, danielcalisthenics.com. And of course, also my Instagram, Achim Goeles.
Great. Yeah, then we're coming to an end. Achim, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. I think it was a really practical episode. That's what I always really enjoy. If it's really something where you listen and you can take a lot of things for your own workout. So thanks a lot for sharing these insights and giving us your experience in the sport, your long experience. So before you can end the episode, and I want to say thank you to everyone listening to this till the end. It's been a long interview. I always appreciate it extremely if somebody is sticking with us till the end. So big thank you if you are listening to this. And if you want to support the episode, give it a thumbs up. That helps a lot. And if you want to have someone in the show, just leave a comment down below with the athlete's name. And yeah, then Achim, thanks a lot to you, and you can say goodbye and end the episode.
Thanks very much for listening. Thanks for being there. And yeah, I don't have nothing else to say. Have a good one. Bye.